2 Timothy chapter 3 this morning, and the title of the message is Understanding the Problem in the Last Days. Understanding the Problem in the Last Days. Our text is going to be verses 1 through 9. And you know, I think you would agree with me that the events of our days are hard to understand. We literally can't believe how or why such things are happening in our world today. Not only are the events of our days hard to understand, but also the thinking of our days is hard to understand as well. So it's hard for us to get a grip on what's going on in our culture, in our world, in these days. Paul wanted to give Timothy some clarity and direction in life in his day, and the challenges of it. And that's why he's writing this pastoral epistle to this young pastor named Timothy. This is the last year of Paul's life. He's probably 69, 70 years of age. He's been a believer for about 30 years. And 2 Timothy is written around 66 AD, probably the last letter of the Apostle Paul. Nero was on a rampage, or has been on a rampage, since about 60 AD, the end of the book of Acts. And this is a dangerous time to be a Christian, a dangerous time to be a Christian that Timothy and Paul are experiencing. In the previous book, or letter of 1 Timothy, Paul sort of spent a lot of time giving Timothy some personal encouragement in his own life that he needed. But now, in 2 Timothy chapter 2, about the middle of the chapter, on through, Paul is exhorting Timothy now as the pastor of this church to oppose falsehood within the church. And he reminds him of some things. He reminds Timothy, as the pastor of this church in Ephesus, this group of believers there, he exhorts him in his ministry and reminds him to not engage in foolish controversies. In other words, don't give lengthy engagement in areas of speculation, but rather deal with clear doctrine, deal with sound doctrine. Devote limited time to such things as speculation, but spend time emphasizing what the Bible emphasizes. We could use the same exhortation today. We as Christian people, we as churches, we independent Baptists, fundamentalists, evangelicalism, we have a tendency to get off on tangents, to spend a lot of time debating and discussing those things that really are not clear in Scripture. And we would do well to spend more time emphasizing in our discussion and in our lives and in our teaching those things that the Bible is clear about. If we would spend our time on those things, we would keep ourselves plenty busy. There's a lot there for us that we could learn and continue to have in our lives. And so he was told to pursue what the Bible emphasizes. And then he told him to persevere with kindness and consistent teaching versus a hostile attitude to people who are recoverable. In other words, there are people that can still be recovered from the false teaching. So Timothy, don't be hostile against these people. Yeah, you be one that is able to teach and kind and shepherd these people, because they could be recovered out of this false teaching. And so he encourages Timothy to do that. Now in the next thought of 2 Timothy chapter 3, 1, he kind of continues this thought, because the first phrase in verse 1 of chapter 3 is, "This know also." So he's going to continue on in giving instruction to Timothy. And as the pastor of the church at Ephesus, Paul wanted Timothy to know, while shepherding this church and dealing with falsehood within it, was not just a matter of correcting it and leaving it at that. In other words, Timothy, it's not just a matter of you correcting what's wrong, dealing with the falsehood, and then just walking away from it, but more safeguarding would need to occur. More safeguarding of, yes, doctrine, but safeguarding of the heart. Or a heart that is directed towards living out this doctrine of salvation. And so he says, listen to me, it's just not correct it, move on, but there's more work to be done, more safeguarding of our hearts as the children of God, and moving on to live for him. We're going to look at two commands in this passage of Scripture tonight to learn about understanding the problem in the last days. And so the first command, and we'll read this together here first. Let's read verses 1 through 9. Timothy, this know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come. For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof, from such turn away. For of this sort are they which creep into houses and lead captive silly women laden with sins, led away with diverse lusts, ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. Now as Jannes and Jabrus withstood Moses, so do these also resist the truth, men of corrupt minds, reprobate concerning the faith. But they shall proceed no further, for their folly shall be manifest unto all men, as theirs also was. And so, understanding the problem in these last days is what we want to look at this morning. We want to look at these first command, these two commands. The first one, found in verses 1 through 5, the first part of verse 5, is first of all, understand the times. Understand the times. That's what Paul is trying to get Timothy to do, to have a perspective of the age and the time in which he was living, in which he was serving. And understand that the times, and here's the point Paul is trying to make, understand that the times that we live in will be hard. The times that we live in will be hard, and they will be hard because of the way people think and the way people live. So understand the times, Timothy, that they will be difficult. They will be perilous because of the way people think and the way people live. And the way people think and live are detailed in this passage. What they care about, what they live for, what they are passionate about are detailed and described here. And here's the point that unfortunately what they have to have or give themselves to is misguided. And so things will be difficult because of the way people think and live, and the way they think and live is misguided, is what Paul is saying. Understand that in these last days there will come times of difficulty. There will come perilous times. Now, I had mentioned this before in teaching, but what is Paul referring to that he says, in the last days perilous times shall come? Well, that phrase, the last day, when he and other writers in the New Testament use it, it's not referring to some day in the far distant future that it will be this way. That's not really what Paul is saying here, that when he uses the term in the last days, it's not saying Paul is looking forward to some future time where things will be as described here. But these last days are really just a term that is referring to the last period of time between Christ's first coming at his birth and his second coming. All right? Hebrews 1:1. God, who at sundry times in various manners spoken to us by the prophets, hath in these last days spoken unto us by his Son. And so when that term, the last day, is used, it's not referring to a future time. It's referring to that period of time between the virgin birth of Christ and the second coming of Christ. And so that's the idea there. That's the idea of this idea of the last days. So what Paul is saying here is that it's like a father to a son. Have you ever said this to your son as they were growing up and moving into adulthood or even in childhood? You maybe said this statement, son, in life you're going to have some rough days. There's going to be some tough days. You're going to experience some hard times. You're going to face difficulty. You're going to face stress and hardship. It's just part of life, son. You're going to have some rough days. Everybody has them. And that's really what Paul is saying here. For this know also, Timothy, that in the last days, that period of time which he was in and which we are in now, you are going to face difficulties. You are going to face hard times. You are going to face perilous times. And these times are difficult. Why are these times difficult? Well, they're difficult for various reasons that we'll look at. But that word perilous there has the idea, it was the same word used of the maniac of Gadara. Remember that maniac of Gadara that was just out apart from everybody else, and he was naked and he was bound in chains, but he was so fierce that even chains could not hold him. The same word there. He could not be restrained. Perilous has the idea of an ominous tone, right? Perilous times, ominous times. Days of fierce difficulty, even demonic in its dimension. Okay? Some of the things that have happened in our country even this past week with the shooting of those police officers and those types of things and the loss of life of so many of those young men in Baton Rouge and in Chicago or Minnesota and so forth, all the things that take place, they are things that are just so difficult, so ominous, even fierce. And sometimes when we consider some of the things that happen in our world, we wonder, is it even demonic in nature? Okay? How can we make sense of it? How do we make sense of it? How do we understand it and comprehend it? So there's going to be perilous times in these last days, difficult times, ominous times. And what makes this difficulty is explained in verses 2 through 5. This know also, Timothy, that in the last days, perilous times shall come. And then verses 2 through 5 go on to explain and describe why there is this difficulty in these last days. And the reason is the character and action of people. In the last days, perilous times shall come. We're living in them. Timothy was living in them. And the reason they're so difficult, they're so ominous, they're so challenging, is because of the character and action of people. And there's a list of characteristics of things that we commonly see. All right? So common, it would almost be odd to see something different, right? As we read through this, are these not things that we commonly see in our age today? Covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful and holy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. Wouldn't it be odd to turn on the news and see none of these things? Wouldn't it be odd to read the paper and see none of these things? And so they are things that we commonly see in our age and would be odd if we did not see otherwise. And so seeing these things as we do does not prove that we are in the last days. In other words, it's not like we read those and say, oh, we're in the last days. Jesus is coming. And he could come today. But reading about those things or seeing those things does not prove that we are in the last days, because we are in the last days. That's the point. We're in the last days. And because of the action and character of men, times are difficult, times are perilous. And it was just as bad as it was back in Timothy's day than it is in our day. And so these are things that we see because we are in the last days. And so we should expect it, is the point. We should expect it. It shouldn't surprise us that we see these things in our culture. And so here's the other important point, and here's really the point I don't want you to miss this morning. Because we can look at these qualities and we can say, yeah, I can think of politicians, I can think of neighbors, I can think of work associates, I can think of the media, I can think of a lot of people in this world that display these qualities. But we commonly see them not just in our others, right? But at times we see them in ourselves, because they rise from hearts that are not in tune with God. The point is, even as believers, if we are out of step with him, if we are out of fellowship with God, then we are going to look more and more like people who don't even know him, correct? That's the point. In other words, we see it in others. But yet, if we are not in fellowship with God, if we are not walking with God, we can see these same characteristics, these same qualities evident in our lives, even as the children of God. And so we have to understand, and Timothy needs to understand, that what makes times hard and difficult is difficult people, and they are difficult because they are not right with God. Okay? And so that's what he's trying to say. So as believers, we have to understand or guard ourselves from the faulty thinking that if I'm not right with God, it will not affect anyone else. All right? But we can, in reality, be part of making things difficult, hard, all right? We have to understand that. And we need to remember that it is God at work in me that enables me to be a blessing. And we want God to be at work in our lives personally. So I am not a source of tension and difficulty and problems and trouble and all those things upon myself and upon others, but I am a source of blessing. So ultimately it gets down to this, that this misplaced love, can result in that, okay? And so Paul doesn't want us to be surprised. People saved and unsaved, not right with God, produce difficulty, and these difficulties become the pattern of the age. We've seen it from Timothy's day even to July 10th, 2016. These qualities still persist during these last days because of people, all right? And so we understand these realities, and it should keep us from this fretfulness, this hand-wringing that we see sometimes among believers. You ever notice that? That when, as things wax worse and worse, which they do, but as we see the difficulties in these days, we as sometimes wring our hands as believers and say, oh, man, this is the worst it's ever been. This is the worst it's ever been. It's now, all right? Instead of just what Paul is saying to Timothy, grow up. This is what's going to be common in this age, amongst people of this age, during the last days. Grow up. This is the way it is. Keep the faith. Live out the faith. Believe. Live differently. Instead of wringing our hands. Oh, it's so bad out there. It's so bad. No. Understand. That's it. It's what it is. All right? This world is no friend. We have to live out, believe, live by faith, live the Christian life. And so that's what he's trying to encourage Timothy to do. Paul gives us the description and diagnosis of the problem. And really, it can be summed up in two things. Number one, a misdirected love. There's difficulty, there's trouble, there's hardship in this age because people's hearts have a misdirected or a misguided love. See, and that's what he's saying here. Men shall be lovers of themselves. Men shall be covetous. Men shall be lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. There's problems and difficulty. In a nutshell, it seems simplistic, is because there's a misguided love in the hearts and the affection of men. That's the foundational problem, our heart's love. What we love, pursue to be happy, what we have to have or give ourselves to is misguided, okay? And our love, our affections, ends up setting the direction and patterns of our lives, okay? And if we're a lover of self, if we're a lover of money, if we are a lover of pleasure, we can count on difficult times because our love is misplaced, okay? Obviously, it's a violation of God's command, but think about it. Think about this. So much of our trouble, my trouble, your trouble, this church's trouble, this world's trouble, so much of our trouble and heartache and sense of life being out of control is sourced in the losing of our connection with God and our love for Him. When do I have trouble in my life? When do I have difficulty in my life? When do I have difficulty in my family many times? When do I have difficulty in my marriage? It's when my love becomes misguided. When I become more important, when things become more important, when God becomes less important, and I am not as good of a father or a husband or a pastor or a citizen when I am disconnected with God in my life personally. See, it's a heart problem. There's difficulty because of a misguided love. Let's talk about lovers of self. Have you ever noticed that people in love with themselves are some of the most unhappy people in life? You ever notice that? That's true. How about lover of money? People who love money, who love the power of money, who love the power to give myself what I want in life. Do we ever struggle with that? Who love the power to control other people through money, who love the power to control their own destiny. We can fall into that trap. See, we can love money. We have a view of retirement, the controlling my destiny. Nothing wrong with planning, right? We need to plan financially, but can we get out of balance with that and be misguided in that love, where that becomes the priority of life, that becomes the purpose of life, is just about my ease in retirement? See? And if we have that love, that then money is becoming a small god, becomes a substitute for God. That is why we cannot serve God and mammon. And so we can pile up all the money in the world and it can't do for you what God has done for you. It can't buy eternal life. It cannot buy forgiveness of sin. And so we have this misguided love of money. How about love of pleasure? Lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. Lovers of ease. It creates a war in our soul. When we love pleasure as Christians, it creates a war in our soul. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. For if any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. The world passes away and the lust thereof, but he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. And so this misguided love for self, this misguided love for money or for pleasure creates a war in our soul, creates a war even amongst us, as James talks about this fighting that is among you. And so there's difficulty because in our age, just like in all ages since Jesus came, and as we await his return, there's a misguided love. Are we, again, guilty of having a misguided love in our lives? All right? And then this misplaced love leads to marred relationships. It leads to marred relationships. In other words, affections towards others is not what it's supposed to be, versus what real Christianity is supposed to be, of drawing different people together to make it possible to live in unity. See? That's what real Christianity is. People saved through the redeeming love of God, coming together from different backgrounds, different avenues of life, and because our love is focused on the Lord, it enables us to live together in proper unity and affection versus marred relationships. Listen to some of these descriptions. All right, boasters and proud. All right, proud being overbearing, unwilling to listen. Okay, nobody. Do you like to be around boastful people and proud people? Okay, no, you don't. All right, that misguided love in their lives of love of self, which results in pride and arrogance and unwillingness to learn. Okay, people don't want to be around those type of people. Those types of people mar relationships. Right? They break relationships down. Blasphemous. That means defaming judgment of God and other people. Disobedient to parents. This idea of disobedient to authority on the baseline level. There are some people that have an attitude of just abhorrence towards the thought of being subservient to somebody else, to be under the authority of somebody else. Some people don't want to live with that mentality. They abhor that mentality. Well, what does an abhorrence of authority structure in our lives do? It breaks down relationships. Young people, when you are disobedient to parents, you are marring that relationship. When you love yourself, you love what you want to do more than what God has called you to do in obeying and honoring your parents, it's going to break that relationship down. It's going to tear it up. See? That's what it was in my life as a teen. I wanted to do what I wanted to do. What did it do? It destroyed that relationship for about a year and a half, 2 years. But once I got right with God, began to love God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love his authority in my life, that relationship just began to grow and grow and grow and grow. Unfortunately, in the brief time that my mother was still alive, but fortunately for the many years that I still have with my father, that respect and love and admiration and appreciation grew because of a proper love, first of all, upon God and obeying my parents because I love God first. All right? No perfect parents. No perfect parents. But you love God, and God will give you this grace to do that. Unthankful, unholy, a lack of inner purity, that breaks down relationships. Verse 3 says that in the last days, men shall be without natural affection. That word is usually used of affection and love of a family. No, affection of a family is normal, right? But yet, even in the last days, there'll be even no normal affection among family. You see that breaking down in our culture, as I'm sure it broke down in that culture? No natural affection, even amongst family. Truce breakers, people that are disloyal. False accusers, they mean scandalous. They speak evil of people even behind their backs. That hurts relationships. Incontinent, without self-control, ungovernable. All right? You ever seen the TV shows where there's intervention, where families get together because somebody's abusing alcohol or drugs because somebody is ungovernable? All right? They can't be controlled. And what does it do? It destroys relationships. All right? The idea of fierce, wild will be a characteristic. Despisers of those that are good. Traitors, people they should be loyal to, they're not. They're turning against. Heady means reckless, thoughtless behavior. High-minded means aloof. Lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness and denying the power thereof. All right? So, not everyone is characterized by all of these at all the time, but these characteristics keep showing up in the lives of people of this age, right? Back in Timothy's day and our day, these characteristics. I may not possess all of them. I can possess some of them if I'm not properly loving God, but we see these qualities just constantly rising up in the lives of people because foundationally there's a misguided love in their lives. Lovers of self, lovers of money, lovers of pleasure. And it produces pain. It produces disruption in lives and those around us. And so that's why there's trouble. And so let's make some applications to us here personally this morning. Ultimately, for believers, for the Christian here this morning, it gets down to this. This misplaced love and characteristics of marred relationships are evidence of an empty religion. All right? For the believer, it is just this misplaced love and characteristics of marred relationships are evidence of an empty religion, of having a form of godliness and an appearance of godliness in our lives. These characteristics that we just read a couple of times can be qualities of people that claim to be religious and in some ways may even appear to be reverent people. Okay? I've seen some of these qualities in my life. You ever been unthankful? I've been unthankful. All right? Have you ever been unholy? You ever lacked inner purity? Oh, I've lacked inner purity. You ever been covetous? I've been covetous. All right? And so these qualities can be qualities of people that even claim to be religious or may appear to be reverent. And so one reason that Paul is talking to Timothy about is because these types of people may in the church and probably were in the church. Okay? There were false teachers. Timothy, deal with the false teachers. But this know also that in these last days, difficult times will come. And the reason they're going to come is because men shall be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, lovers of pleasure. They will be people that may have a form of godliness, but they are denying the power thereof in their lives. You're going to have to deal with this, Timothy. And the same admonition is as to us today. In these last days, perilous times shall come among us, in us, because we may be lovers of pleasure, lovers of self, lovers of money. And so we need to guard ourselves against that possibility as well in these last days. So it can happen among us. It's not confined, these characteristics, to unbelievers, but it can be in our lives. You know, what is our real threat, folks, as a body of believers? Is the real threat for us that today we're going to walk out from this place and join some cult somewhere? That we're going to turn away from the doctrines of the faith, of redemption through the blood of Christ, saved by grace and grace alone? Or is that really the threat for us today, that we're going to walk away from that sound doctrine and those sound theological teachings and join some other religious denomination or cult? No, that's not the real threat that we face today. But the real threat that we face is that we retain the name of a Christian in a church but abandon the realities of Christianity in our lives. That's the threat. That we have the name, we have the association, we have the form or the appearance, but we deny the realities of the Spirit of God and the power of God working in our lives individually and as a body. That's the real threat that we face. It's not just turning our backs upon the fundamentals of the faith. And many times this process in my life and as your life is slow and it's subtle. You ever wonder why churches have problems? You know why churches have problems is because they are full of people. They are full of pastors. They are full of church staff. They are full of congregants that make mistakes. And the source of those problems can be found in the hearts of believers that are not loving God and acting like it. Okay? That's the reality. All right? That's why we have problems. Because you have a pastor that sometimes does not love God as he should love God. And because he is not loving God as he should love God, he does not have the attitudes or the actions that are going to promote those things that are God-honoring. And there's church staff like that, and you're like that. And that's what we have to guard ourselves against, of having this form or appearance, but denying the power thereof. And this true godliness can only happen through the supernatural power of Jesus Christ in our life. There's no better way for that to happen. So would we define or characterize our practice of Christianity mainly intellectual this morning? Holding to a creed, a form, a custom, a conformity to a culture? This church culture? This church has a culture, right? And so would we characterize our practice just as intellectual or conforming to a culture? Or is your or my Christianity the divine power of God working in our lives? That's the question we have to ask ourselves. And that's the important, the crux of it. That's a tough question to answer, is it not? It's a tough question to answer. Tough question for me to answer. And it's a lot easier for us to go through the motions. It's a lot easier for us to stay in the form. It's a lot easier for us to keep a list of do's and don'ts than to depend upon the power of God working in our lives. But we need the power of God. What does the power of God in our lives look like? What does it look like when we're not just a form of godliness, but we are allowing the power of God to look at work in our lives? What does it look like? Well, it probably looks like the opposite of those things described in verses 2 through 5. It's probably the opposite of loving ourselves. It's loving God and others. Of covetousness, the opposite of covetousness. It's the opposite of being boasters or proud or blasphemers or disobedient or unthankful or unholy. It's the opposite of those things. That's what the power of God looks like in our lives. It probably looks like Galatians 5 and the fruit of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. That's probably what the power of God looks like in our lives. It probably looks like the garments that are mentioned in Colossians chapter 3, verses 8 through 15. But know ye also, put off all these: anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communication out of your mouth. Lie not one to another, seeing that ye have put off the old man and with his deeds, and put on the new man, which is renewed in knowledge after the image of him that created him. Put on therefore as the elect of God, holy and beloved, bowels of mercies, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, long-suffering, forbearing one another and forgiving one another. If any man have a quarrel against any, even as Christ forgave you, so also do ye. And above all things, put on charity, which is the bond of perfectness. And let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to the which also ye are called in one body, and be ye thankful. It probably looks like Philippians chapter 2, verses 1 through 5, where it says that we are had the mind of Christ, who being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God. He made himself of no reputation and took him on the form of a servant. That we're not to think every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. That's probably what God's power looks like. It looks like Jesus Christ that affects every area of my life, and the world needs to see that type of Christianity. And so the reason there's difficulty in our lives, in our church, in our culture, in our world, is because there's a misguided love in the hearts of people. A love of self, a love of pleasure, a love of money, rather than a love for God. All right? And it can happen in our lives just as it can happen in anybody else's lives, but we need to not just have the form of godliness, an empty religion, because there's not the proper love for God in our lives, but we need to have a proper love for God that will demonstrate the power of God in our lives, working in us and through us. So that's the first command: understand the times, why there's difficulties, what's the source of those difficulties, and what we need in our lives. We need to allow God's Spirit and God's power to be working in our lives every day. And then the second command in closing is this: avoid or turn away from such people or such living. Recognize and understand the problem, but yet avoid such living. And that's what it says in verse 5, from such turn away. And then it goes on to describe those back then that would go in and have a negative influence in people and so forth. So we need to be willing to break off and not get intertwined with people who live Christianity or religiously this way, all right? Instead of looking and living for the real stuff versus that which is fake. You know, when the church becomes dominated by this kind of religion of form without power, think about this. When the church, when I or you become dominated by this kind of religion of form and without power, it becomes a corrupting influence in the world rather than salt and light. That's the truth, folks. When it's just about coming to church, sitting in the pew, get up, get down, bow, all those things, it's just a form, okay? You have to have form, okay? We're just not going to wing it here, okay? We're just not going to come and just say, oh, well, what are we doing today? Let's just wing it. We have to have structure. We have to have form. But when it comes all about the appearance, when it becomes all about the form, with no heart, with no love for God, then we become a corrupting influence in this world versus salt and light in this world. And we have to avoid that in our lives. And so we need to understand that. And this passage shows that dangerous influence. Those that promote this kind of religion prey upon morally weak and gullible people who are always searching for the next great thing. See? And so they were people that opposed the truth as well. And Paul goes on to say that their future is doomed in verse 9. In other words, there's no future in this kind of living. It's folly. Its folly will be revealed. It'll implode. It'll rot on the vine. And true religion and Christianity will prevail. And so, Christian, do you realize the danger this morning? The huge difference between religion of form and religion of divine power. You know, a lot of times in the Old Testament, we won't take the time this morning, but we could turn to Isaiah chapter 1, verses 14 through 17. And God says there, I hate your new moons. I hate your feast days. I hate your lifting up of your hands in prayer. These are things that God prescribed. This was the form that God prescribed. It was common custom in the Old Testament when they prayed to lift their hands in the air and pray. So these are things that God prescribed that God says, I hate those things. And then he goes on, I would rather you be ones that are caring for others, that are caring for your neighbors. I want your love for me and your religion to be such that it moves you to meet the needs of other people. See, to have an impact in the lives of other people. And so, folks, we can fall into the same trap as the people of God, the children of Israel, that we can be involved in the form that God has prescribed. We can come and turn in our hymnals to hymn number 151. We can do all these things, but if we don't have a love for God and others that are resulting in a life-living impact for the good of others and the glory of God, God says, I hate those things. I hate those things. All right? And God could say to us, I hate the singing of your hymns. Okay? I hate your church fellowship meals. I hate those things if they are not motivated by a love for God. A love for God that is that allows the power of God to work in us and through us to maybe do those same things. There's nothing wrong with doing those things, but God back then and now is concerned about a heart of love that's not misguided towards other things. James chapter 1, verses 26 and 27 says this, if any man among you seem to be religious, he has the form, he has the appearance, and bridleth not his tongue, this man's religion is vain. Pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction, and for a man to keep himself unspotted from the world. See, pure religion, religion of the heart, religion that is motivated by a love for God, will then result in change in our lives, transforming change in our lives, and then will result in reaching out to the needs of other people as well. And so That's what God would have us to be. And so we're empty if it's just all about form, appearance, habits, and doesn't matter if we're right with God or not. And so we need to cultivate true godliness as Paul did before Timothy. He says there a little bit later, but Timothy, you've fully known my doctrine, my manner of life, my purpose, my faith, my long-suffering, my charity, my patience. You've known these things in my life. The power of God working in me. Allow the power of God to work in you and amongst your people. Experience the resource of other people. We need help living for God, do we not? I need help living for God. I need help loving God. That's why the scripture says, not forsaking the assembling of yourselves together as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another unto love and good works. See, we need to use the resource of one another, this mutual life-touching life, to help us love the Lord more. The resource of scripture, that's what it says in verses 16 and 17. All scripture given by inspiration of God, profitable for doctrine, reproof, correction, instruction, and righteousness, that the man of God might be perfect, truly furnished unto every good work. We need to ask God to work in our lives at the point of desire, our passions, our love. We need God's grace to live it out in this world. So this morning, maybe as believers, we deal with the issue of a misdirected love in our lives, of misdirected passions and priorities that is resulting in a damaging relationships in our lives, in our homes, at work, in our church, with our neighbors. We need to love God, which will allow us to love others and fulfill those two great commandments. It'll take a mutual participation to see real godliness in our lives. Mutual participation. Paul said, I press toward the mark. It will take a commitment by us that God, yes, that is my desire to love you with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength. All right? That is my desire to follow you, to press towards that mark, to be more like your Son, the Lord Jesus Christ. So it will take that commitment on our part, but it will take the energizing of God, because the book of Galatians says it is God that energizes you both to will and to do of his good pleasure. It's a mutual participation. It's just not me just picking myself up by the bootstraps and saying, yes, I'm going to love God, 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 I'm going to love God. That's not what it is. It's that commitment, it's that willingness to pick ourselves up by the bootstraps and press towards the mark to run the race that's before us, but is also depending upon the power of God to energize us both to will and to do of his good pleasure. I need to guard myself from this misguided love that brings great difficulty and damage in my life and those that I influence and the world that I live in, that I'm called to be salt and light. And I trust we'll take this warning this morning, this understanding of the real problem in these last days. It's the hearts of men. It's our hearts. And I trust we'll allow God to do the work in our heart that needs to be done. Would you stand, please? We all could love God more, and we need to love God more. But maybe this morning your love is misguided. Your love is misdirected. Maybe because of that misdirected love for God, you are really faltering, and you're a lot of damage in your own heart and life. And now it's just resulted in an empty religion, just going through the motions, just the form, but denying the power thereof. This morning, maybe in our own hearts, each of our hearts, maybe every one of us just need to make that commitment to make sure that our love's not misguided. Just saying, Lord, I haven't loved you as I should. I need to love you more. I want to love you more. I want to live for you more. Do that work in my life that only you are able to do, that I might experience your power in my life.